Well, folks, it's Election Challenge Day in the United States of America. What will no doubt become one of our proudest traditions as members of the losing party in any election gather to castigate and insult the members of the winning party. I imagine a future where we'll no doubt grill hot dogs and throw things at people who disagree with us politically, as the Republic unravels like the sweater from the famous Weezer song, leaving us cold and alone and probably blaming Russia. I'm Patrick Cunningham, and this is Socratic Citizen. So we actually have two different elections to talk about. So first of all, we have the Georgia runoff election, which took place yesterday here in my beautiful home state. I won't give it away, but now controlled by someone, and there will be ramifications. We actually have one race that's not, we're not quite sure what's going to happen, but it's looking pretty much like it's sewn up. We know what's going to happen. So let's take a look at all of that. I've got some interesting stuff about people who are in prison, who are facing prison time, who are getting out of prison, who are not going to prison, and who are not going to be getting out of prison, but will, it appears, continue to do prison time. So let's start with the Georgia stuff, because I feel like that's what everybody wants to hear about. So yesterday we had Kelly Loeffler versus Raphael Warnock. Raphael Warnock is a noted Marxist. Fan of Fidel Castro and Jeremiah Wright. Also, he is, I have it on good authority, a black person, which should militate strongly in his favor in the election. And indeed, it looks like from the Hill that Warnock has defeated Kelly Loeffler in the Georgia Senate runoff. So he was projected to have defeated Senator Kelly Loeffler. Now, I should point out that there are a couple of counties, some rather infamous counties, in fact, if we recall November's election, notably DeKalb and Fulton, which we know, which we think of here in this state as the Atlanta counties. Those are the ones that contain Metro Atlanta. DeKalb is like the slightly nicer one, a little bit more uppity, maybe. It doesn't really matter because NBC, CBS, ABC, and CNN, the four horsemen of the media apocalypse, have called the race for Warnock shortly before 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday. And notably in those two counties, I should say before we go on, voting stopped last night with about 10,000 votes left to count. But those are some of the most heavily Democratic areas in the state. Savannah down on the coast there is also pretty liberal, but mostly it's Atlanta. Stacey Abrams was the mayor of Atlanta. That's where she came from. So it's looking like counting votes in those areas is not exactly going to like boost David Perdue's lead. And it looks like his lead was, at least when I checked at about 11:30 last night before going to bed, it looked like he had about a 2-point lead. But everybody, including 538, was estimating that Ossoff had like a 90% chance of winning because where the remaining votes are coming from, notably Fulton and DeKalb counties. So with that in mind, I can reasonably agree with the four horsemen of the media apocalypse calling the race for Warnock here specifically. Ossoff, we're still kind of up in the air. There's a slight chance that maybe Perdue would pull something off, but really the chances are that it's going to be Ossoff. And as I said yesterday, this is an unlikely outcome, and most people watching this election were surprised because these races were a toss-up. They were within like 0.2 points of each other, both races in the polling. And so if, like me, you like to think rationally, you recognize there are four possible outcomes. Republicans win both. Loeffler wins, but Perdue does not. Perdue wins, but Loeffler does not, and they both lose. And in three out of those four possible scenarios, Republicans would hold control of the Senate. We got the one out of the four that results in Democrats having basically a tie-breaking majority. They have a 50-50, there's a 50-50 Senate, and Kamala Harris will be the tiebreaker in the Senate. So basically the Democrats, if it really comes down to a party line vote, the Democrats have the ability to break the tie and fundamentally get what they want. So Warnock, who is the pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, will be the first African-American to represent Georgia in the Senate. Yes, as I mentioned, he does appear to be a black person. So the pastor declared victory in a video address after midnight on Wednesday. We were told we couldn't win this election, but tonight we proved that with hope, hard work, and the people by our side, anything is possible, Warnock said. So, Georgia, I'm honored by the faith that you've shown in me, and I promise you this tonight. I'm going to the Senate to work for all of Georgia, no matter who you cast your vote for in this election. Now, Warnock will be up for re-election in 2022 because this is a special election. Kelly Loeffler was never actually elected to the Senate. She was appointed when the longtime Georgia Senator Johnny Isaacson retired. And Kemp put her in there, and, you know, she's 9 feet tall, but that did not help her to be far-seeing enough to actually win this election. Now, it's very clear why they lost. So, you know what? Let's wait there. So, before we dive into why they lost, Ossoff and Perdue, this is from the Miami Herald via the Associated Press, or the Associated Press via the Miami Herald. So, basically, this is the important part. There's still some leftover votes to count. Technically, it's too early to call because, in theory, Perdue could get those votes. But you see outlets like even Vox, they just went ahead and said Ossoff won. So it's looking like that's going to be the case. Those of us who remember Nevada and Arizona from this past election got all mad at Fox News for calling Arizona early, but guess what? Arizona's electoral college votes went to Biden. So that's just the way the cookie crumbles these days. And of course, everyone is pointing fingers, trying to figure out what went wrong and what's happening, even though if we search our souls, as I always encourage anyone watching this show to do, we know what really happened. We know exactly what happened. Maybe I find it easier to know what happened because I live here, but we'll talk about that in just a second. The Daily Wire is beating its head against the wall, trying to reassure itself and us that things are going to be okay with this headline. Recent history of one-party rule shows it doesn't last for long. That since FDR, the only time that Democrats have held all three, the presidency, the House of Representatives, and the Senate for more than 2 years, was between 1977 and 1980. And we know, of course, that presaged Ronald Reagan's massive, huge 49-state landslides in the 80s. So, ultimately, though, we know what happened. And this is the part I wanted to talk about a second ago. Politico wants to blame Trump, but I don't think Trump is really the one to blame. Really, it's Lynn Wood. Actually, his name is L. Lynn Wood, and I've decided that that first L stands for loony, because he is the guy who a couple of days ago was explaining how Chief Justice John Roberts of the Supreme Court has been compromised by the CIA, probably the lizard people too, but, you know, at least maybe he left the lizard people thing at home for today. Lizard-like reptilians have compromised Chief Justice John Roberts by taking pictures of him having sex with children, and so therefore Roberts knows he can't cross the CIA/lizard people from Nibiru by agreeing to hear election fraud cases, and so he has to dismiss them out of hand without even looking at them. I imagine that the many other federal judges who have rejected Trump camp claims of election irregularities or fraud are also compromised by the lizard people from Nibiru, at least according to Looney Lynn Wood. And this is the same guy who is, I think, if you have to boil it down to one thing, and rarely can you do that in an election, but in this one we can boil it down to one thing. Lynn Wood is personally responsible for the makeup of the United States Senate right now, because Lynn Wood was the guy who started saying like 2 months ago that Republicans in Georgia should boycott the Senate election to show their displeasure at election fraud, to say, well, if you're not going to run fair elections, then I'm not going to vote. And I understand the theory behind it, right? The theory is we're going to just keep not voting. And then we're going to say, look, these elections are completely illegitimate. This is just Democrats voting themselves in over and over again through a corrupt process, and I refuse to participate. And assuming, of course, that the lizard-led Democratic Party really is the evil child-molesting entity that Lynn Wood seems to believe that it is, I'm sure that he would no doubt be vindicated by history. However, those of us whose heads are not quite so far in the clouds agree that it is unlikely, to say the least, that his particular Weltanschauung reflects anything like reality. And so reality, I think, will ultimately not vindicate Lynn Wood and his calls to boycott the Georgia runoff elections, because now the Democrats control the Senate. So, in other words, Trump-sympathizing Republicans who chose to listen to Lynn Wood instead of Trump, by the way, who campaigned for Loeffler and Perdue, came to Georgia and tried to get people to come out and vote, despite the fact that he thinks that the election was stolen here. He still thought it was important to come out and vote. And I think that people, some Republicans didn't show up. Lynn Wood was just enough to kill that Republican motivation that's normally so high in runoff elections that got these two Democrats elected. Well, at least this one Democrat elected and the other one, we'll see what happens. Vert says Trump can still win the election per Rule 34 of the Secure Currency and Taxes Act. Scat, Trump can invoke artificial inflation if the inflation gets too high. Trump can call emergency powers and stay in office. Look it up. Scat inflation rule 34. Okay, you are just hilarious. That's hilarious. Where did you learn to tell jokes, and how can I become more like you? There's no way I'm typing that into any search engine because I know something horrifying is going to appear, and I really don't want to look at whatever it is. And no, by the way, Vert, I know that Trump cannot still win the election. In fact, that's been the thing I've been yelling about the most here over the past couple of days. And it is indeed people like Lynn Wood insisting that Trump can still win the election that have caused this runoff election to turn out the way it did. So contrary to what Warnock has to say, it was not hope and togetherness that won this election. It was loony Lynn Wood telling Georgians not to show up and vote as a way of protest. The, I have to say, dumbest form of protest of which I have ever heard. I suppose you could say we're all going to stop eating ice cream now forever as a protest against the election, and that would be dumber, but it would be harder to think of anything else. So Politico wants to blame Trump, however, and I understand where they're coming from here. They say Democrats have pulled off at least one Senate win in Georgia, with another likely to follow. And Republicans are pointing a frustrated finger at Donald Trump. With control of the Senate at stake in the state's two races, the president chose to spend weeks peddling baseless claims that Georgia's electoral system was rigged, fueling an online movement to boycott Tuesday's election. See, this is where Politico gets it wrong. Trump did not tell people to boycott the election. Trump contested the election because he, like 40% of the American electorate, believes the election was rigged or stolen, or however you want to phrase that. So Republican leaders and fractured the local... Oh, he demonized the state's Republican leaders and fractured the local GOP. He ignored calls from his allies to rally in the state sooner. His support for Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue mainly came in the form of occasional tweets and two rallies, including one on Monday. He blasted Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell for not heeding his calls for boosted stimulus checks. Now, I don't know that this is really Trump who's the problem here. If this is the tack you're going to take, if you're going to say that the stimulus checks had anything to do with this election, I think you have to lay the blame then squarely at the feet of Mitch McConnell. That if indeed Republicans could have claimed credit for those $2,000 checks going out, there might be different people going to the Senate here in a couple of weeks. Or a couple of days. So that is that, unfortunately. So I guess that's just the way the cookie crumbles here in American politics, and we're just going to have to put up with it. But there's more going on in the world. Perhaps you remember this guy, this accused gunman From Kenosha, Kyle Rittenhouse, the Daily Caller, reports that he has pleaded not guilty on all charges. We were wondering when his case, if ever, was going to actually show up in court. And I am unhappy to report that he has apparently tapped, this is before he went crazy, Lynn Wood for his defense team. Because weird as it is to say, Lynn Wood actually had a sterling legal career as an anti-defamation lawyer back before he something happened to him. Maybe what really happened is the lizard people and the CIA got to Lynn Wood. And that's why he's acting the way he is now. So Kyle Rittenhouse, the 18-year-old accused of killing two people during a riot in Kenosha, Wisconsin, pleaded not guilty on Tuesday to all charges filed against him, numerous sources reported. So, I mean, frankly, this is good. Those of us who looked at the Kyle Rittenhouse thing are inclined to believe that he has, at the very least, grounds to claim self-defense. So, obviously, I don't know how the video starts. I don't think there is video of the beginning of the altercation. There's only video of him running away from three people. He trips and falls, turns around, and there's people behind him. One of them tries to hit him with a skateboard. Another one's carrying a gun. He opens fire. Two people die. One loses his bicep. And Kyle Rittenhouse walks away, following which he immediately tries to turn himself into the police. The police drive by. They say, get out of the road. You're in the way. So the next day, he turns himself into a different police department. And here we are, I think, 5 or 6 months later. And he is still dealing with the legal fallout from his decision to try and go, quote unquote, protect property. I guess that depends on how much faith you give that particular claim of his. But others are not quite so lucky in their legal representation. We have Enrique Tarrio, who was notably on social media daring the authorities to come arrest him for burning a Black Lives Matter flag, ripping it down from the front of two historically black churches in Washington, D.C., and burning these Black Lives Matter flags. And so the Washington Times reports that Enrique Tarrio, Proud Boys leader, has been banned from Washington, D.C. by a judge. So a judge has banned, this is from, yeah, Washington Times says a judge has banned the leader of the Proud Boys from the nation's capital after he was accused of vandalizing a Black Lives Matter banner at a historic black church and found with high-capacity firearm magazines when he was arrested. I'm not sure why that's surprising. Of course he has high-capacity magazines. I'm surprised he does not have explosives and lightsabers in his trunk. So the order bans Henry Enrique Tarrio, 36, from entering the District of Columbia with very limited exceptions to meet with his attorney or appear in court. It comes a day after he was arrested, arriving in Washington ahead of protests planned by supporters of President Donald Trump to coincide with the congressional vote expected Wednesday to affirm Joe Biden's victory. We will talk about those, of course. That's a different section. We'll get there. Right now, I just want to talk about Enrique Tarrio dealing with his prison stuff here. So Tarrio was arrested Monday by the Metropolitan Police Department and accused of burning a Black Lives Matter banner that was torn down from a historic black church in downtown Washington last month. So he is facing property destruction of property charges and also some weapons charges for the high-capacity magazines, which I guess D.C. is pretty strict about that kind of stuff. So according to the criminal complaint, when police pulled Tarrio over on the warrant for vandalizing the sign, officers found two unloaded magazines emblazoned with the Proud Boys logo in his bag that have a capacity of 30 rounds each for AR-15 or M4 style weapons. So it looks like, and I read this actually in an op-ed from the Cato Institute, talking about the Proud Boys as an unsavory element of the right that needs to be excised, that people on the right need to tell the Proud Boys to pound sand. But I don't think that that is going to happen. Indeed, this seems more like the future of the right than it does like a passing thing. It seems to me that as long as you have Antifa, you've got to have the Proud Boys, because for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And, you know, every force produces an opposite force opposing it. And so every time you have Antifa dressing up in black, you're going to have Proud Boys dressing up in their matching polo shirts with the yellow and the black, carrying magazines emblazoned with their logo. That is ammunition magazines, not Playboys. And marching around talking about how the streets belong to them and not to Antifa. One could indeed think of the Proud Boys and Antifa as kind of an expression of America's collective id, as of the collective conflict that is currently rending the soul of our republic, and that will have to be healed at some point if we don't want to descend into French Revolution-style chaos that results in a Napoleon Bonaparte uniting the country under an iron rule just to get people to get along. Because we have to remember, in the French Revolution and the Roman Revolution, two subjects I very much enjoy reading about, in both cases, revolutionary chaos led to people so sick of civil war that they turned to dictators, Augustus Caesar and Napoleon Bonaparte, in order to simply make the chaos stop. They said, we will take a king, we will take an emperor, that's fine, just make people stop fighting with each other. And Augustus Caesar, while he completely reorganized the Roman state to make himself and his descendants the emperors for the next, like, 400 years, he also brought the state back, at least on the surface, to a kind of traditionalism. You would say that Augustus Caesar was indeed a culture warrior on behalf of traditional Roman values. And there are actually, there's these little stone busts of his wife, Livia, and she's wearing this particular hairstyle. It's not something you would see nowadays. It's like there's a roll at the front, and then everything else is, all of her, rest of her hair is pulled back. And I remember reading Mary Beard's SPQR, which features a plate of that bust, and says this hairstyle right here is supposed to be, like, symbolic of traditional American values. I'm not sure what the equivalent would be here in the United States. Maybe a bikini made out of a flag, because our culture's a little bit different. But you get the idea. And I know a little bit less about Bonaparte, but as far as I understand, he did kind of the same thing. They used cultural traditionalism as a way to calm down the Civil War while coalescing or consolidating all power in themselves. And unless we can deal with the internal conflict that leads to the rise of Antifa and Proud Boys beating each other up in the streets, eventually the chaos gets so bad that the overwhelming majority of voters, or of the people in general, especially as we lose faith in our election system, will want to turn to someone like this. History doesn't always repeat itself, Mark Twain said, but it does rhyme. And we should be worried about that rhyme, because I have no interest in living through a civil war. As interesting as it would be in 30 years, for those intermediary 30 years, it would be rather miserable. But we'll leave the Proud Boys for the time being to do their thing, because as it turns out, no Kenosha officers will face charges in the Jacob Blake shooting, prosecutors say. Now, this is an interesting juxtaposition, where Kyle Rittenhouse, who shot a couple of people, faces intentional homicide charges, whereas the cops who shot the guy that led to the protest that resulted in Kyle Rittenhouse shooting two people will not face any charges. They did everything right. And of course, those who've seen the video can agree that there is, does seem to be a little bit of excess brutality on the part of the police force. One can necessarily be all in all supportive of the police, and yet at the same time call them out when they do brutalist things, or I should say brutal things. I don't think they're engaging in architecture. So the Wisconsin police officer, Fox News reports, involved in the shooting of Jacob Blake last year, igniting several days of unrest that included two fatal shootings, will not face criminal charges, prosecutors said Tuesday. And of course, for those who want to say that cops get unfair treatment in court, in other words, that they get away with stuff that you and I would never get away with, up to and including violations of the law, this does seem to be some evidence for that claim. I have a hard time understanding how Kyle Rittenhouse can be in jail, but these two cannot. To my way of thinking, it would actually be the other way around, and Rittenhouse would walk free, but perhaps the cops would have to face charges or at least some kind of serious investigation of what happened there, because they shot the guy in the back a lot of times. Shooting people in the back, generally not a good thing. Shooting a guy 7 times, also generally not a good thing. Oh, he was going for a knife. Okay, well, it took him a long time to walk around that car. If you watch the video, there was plenty of other opportunities for them to do other things besides shoot him repeatedly. Conservatives who always side with the police, I worry about those people, because it's the police. The police literally are the tool of the oppressor, all right? And I don't mean that like, the police are evil. I mean, when somebody does become evil, it's going to be the police they're going to use. You don't want to have an outsized level of respect for the people who work for the government that we so mistrust. A healthy mistrust of government means a healthy mistrust of police. Not hating the police, not killing the police, not all cops are bastards. Healthy skepticism, healthy mistrust. Verify their behavior. Body cameras, very careful record keeping, opportunities for prosecution, for investigation. Anybody who's given a gun and told to enforce the law has to be held to a higher standard than those like you and me who were merely charged with following the law. Because if I mess up, oops, I drove too fast on the road. If the police officer messes up, the state is now engaged in oppression and they've delegitimized their monopoly on violence. And that situation, unchecked, leads ultimately to the downfall of society. Not that this particular case is going to lead to the downfall of society, but look at this in the context of everything else we've been talking about today. And it's reason enough to look, to see maybe a little bit concerned about this sort of thing. So that brings us to our third section of the day, which is, of course, Russia, 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 because Russia has a secret plan to literally destroy everything. And in this case, what that means is, and this is actually kind of funny, the U.S. news reports, U.S. intelligence agencies conclude that Russia was behind the massive SolarWinds hack. So you're all familiar with the SolarWinds hack. Supposedly there have been people rooting around in the protected inner sanctums of government servers for something like 6 months. And immediately when the news broke that this had been going on, that there were these massive data breaches over the last 6 months affecting like the Treasury Department, the FBI, so on and so forth, immediately everyone said, oh, this was probably Russia. And I know that there were several liberal publications like Raw Story in the Week that were like, oh yeah, when Russia hacked us. And I'm like, wait a second, we don't know who did this. So when I read U.S. intelligence agencies conclude Russia was behind the SolarWinds hack, what I hear is someone going, all right, so we're going to investigate and find out who did that massive Russian hack. So we're going to investigate the Russian hack and find out who the culprit was. You know that massive hack that Russia did? We're going to investigate it and find out who did it. Oh, and we conclude that the massive Russian hack that was done by Russia, it was done by Russia. I'm like, okay, great. I knew you were going to say that. You didn't even need to open your mouth. The FBI, the article says, and other U.S. intelligence agencies said Tuesday that a recent hack of federal agencies is, quote, likely Russian in origin. Is this like when the Hunter Biden story was almost certainly Russian disinformation and top security officials all agreed this has all the earmarks of Russian disinformation? So there again, oh, you know that Russian disinformation about Hunter Biden? Well, listen, I want to tell you something. It's Russian and it's disinformation. This is what we call affirming the consequent. Affirming the consequent is actually going to be a big deal for the rest of this episode. It's a logical fallacy, if you're not familiar, in which my argument contains the conclusion I'm trying to prove. Right? It's like saying that green is the best of all colors because it is the greenest. And yes, I did lift that from Wikipedia when I was looking up how to explain this particular logical fallacy. But, you know, for example, and this will come up again, it's like the abortion debate. pro-choice people in the abortion debate say, I should have the right to choose because it's my body. When indeed the very argument is over whether a fetus constitutes part of your body. If it is not part of your body, then obviously you don't have the right to choose. And so the argument itself contains the conclusion that it's going to prove. Well, it's, I should have the right to do with my body what I want to because it's my body. I'm like, well, that's the whole thing we're trying to prove. You're just claiming that you're right. You're not making a real argument. So anyway, to go back to the article here, four U.S. government agencies tasked with determining the perpetrator of a massive and ongoing hack by a foreign power into federal computer servers revealed Tuesday evening that Russia was the likely culprit, confirming a broad consensus among analysts and officials. Surprise, surprise. The review conducted by the FBI, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the National Security Agency, and Homeland Security's Chief Cyber Defense Agency, known as CISA, concluded the months-long hacking campaign revealed in December was, quote, likely Russian in origin. Likely. So you don't know. But we're still going to report it as they conclude that it was Russia. Oh, it was definitely Russia. Oh, no. Well, actually, it was likely Russia. We have no idea who did it. I don't even know if it's real. We have no idea what actually happened. We're living in this world where the media just kind of repeats whatever government press agencies tell them. The era of investigative journalism is over with. The era of the adversarial press is, in effect, over with. You have this establishment media that's only too happy to repeat the lots of the national security community and the administrative state and the executive state. And really, when you get that, what you have is a de facto state propaganda. That's really what it's about. And people accuse One America News Network of being propaganda. One America News Network is, they really love Trump, and so it gets compared to like a state propaganda agency that just says great things about the leader all the time. But Trump came and went in 4 years. The national security community has been around for 70 years, 75 years at this point. That's a real power structure, a consistent power structure that has had time to wiggle its fingers into various places in the media. And so when you get stories like you have Hollywood directors that have top secret security clearances, when you get stories like, I forget the guy's name, it was somebody at the New York Times was running his articles by people at the CIA before publishing them. And these are not like conspiracy theories. I didn't read this on Lynn Wood's website. You can go Google this stuff. It's completely out there in the open. It just doesn't get talked about because the people who would talk about it are the very people who were doing it. And so we get this. Oh, Russia hacked us. Oh, Russia changed the election results. Oh, Russia did this. Russia did that. We desperately need an enemy in this kind of lame attempt to unify the people behind a common enemy, Russia. Those of us with our eyes open know better than to give this the time of day. I don't think that Russia's really an enemy of the United States. I think that the United States might be an enemy of Russia. I think we desperately want Putin to be the boogeyman we hope that he is, but he's really just not. And indeed, if Russia's really as bad as they say, you'd think they'd be able to knock the Earth out of its orbit. Well, apparently, the Earth is getting knocked out of its orbit. According to the Daily Mail here, the Earth is spinning faster today than at any time in the past 50 years. I have no doubt that Russia is to blame. Clearly, it was Russia. Year 2021 is set to fly by, the Daily Mail writes, as the Earth is spinning faster than at any time in the past 50 years. Prompting scientists to call for the addition of a negative leap second. That is the most awkward possible phrasing of this sentence. What it should say is prompting scientists to call for the removing of 1 second. So they want to have one, they want to have a negative leap minute that has 59 seconds in it. so that clocks will be reoriented towards the actual length of the day. That doesn't mean that minutes will all be 59 seconds. Do not worry. This is not a liberal conspiracy to change the size of minutes, all right, in order to have low-level employees paid more per hour by cramming more minutes into their hours. No. So let's actually read some of this. So time is passing quicker now than at any point in the last half century, official data reveals. Earth's rotation is faster than normal, and as a result, the length of a day is currently ever so slightly shorter than the regulation 24 hours. And the world's timekeepers are now debating whether to delete a second from time. That would be another good way to phrase it, better than the way they phrased it above, to account for the change and bring the precise passing of time back into line with the rotation of the Earth. While the addition of a so-called negative leap second has never been done before, a total of 27 leap seconds have been added since the 1970s in order to keep atomic time in line with solar time. This is because, for decades, the Earth has taken slightly longer than 24 hours to complete a rotation. But since last year, it has been taking slightly less. So Earth's rotation is slightly faster than normal, and as a result, the length of a day is currently consistently shorter than the regulation 24 hours. The world's timekeepers are now debating whether to delete a second from time to account from the change, to account for the change. So what I think is really going on here, the reason time is moving faster is that Russia is obviously at fault. I believe they implanted rockets into the Earth to push the Earth moving faster, to make time go by faster, so that Joe Biden's presidency will end sooner, so that Trump can run again in 2024. They can manipulate the election as they manipulated the rotation of the Earth, and then they will slow the Earth's rotation down again so that Trump will be able to serve a slightly longer second term. But of course, we can impeach Trump with 15 minutes left in his tenure in 2028 to make sure he doesn't get the extra time that Russia wants him to have. But anyway, that's enough silliness, because I know what everybody really wants to talk about, and that is the election challenge. And yes, I did wait until almost the end to bring this up, but I think it's important, and we're going to talk about it for a few minutes. So let's, buckle in here, guys, because this is going to get real serious real fast. So first of all, we have this. We have the people on the left who seem to believe that Republicans today who challenge the electoral vote count, that will take place today. We will be back tomorrow on this show with the results of everything that happened in today's challenge. And so opinion, never forget the names of these Republicans who are attempting a coup, the New York Times writes. And this is the general left position, that what these guys are doing in the Electoral College, or what they're doing in the House and Senate today as regards the Electoral College, amounts to an attempted coup, and that really these guys are on the same level as the Confederates in the Civil War who want to leave the Union. But this is where affirming the consequent becomes important again. Because all of these arguments, both this one and the one we're about to look at from the right, talking about Senate Republicans and then why an Electoral College challenge is imperative, they all take as their premise either that Trump clearly won the election and it was stolen, or he clearly lost the election and he's trying to steal it. So at no point are we having the real discussion, which is, what happened actually in the election? Indeed, both sides just claim that they're right, refuse to talk to the other side or acknowledge that their claims could ever have any legitimacy, and then write lacrimose opinion pieces about Republicans are attempting a coup. So anyway, let's read a little bit of this, because this is important. He also contradicts himself a little bit in this article, I think. And then we'll move on to the other takes on this. The New Testament asks us in Mark 8:36, quote, "For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world but lose his soul?" Senators Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Ron Johnson, and their fellow GOP coup plotters clearly have forgotten that verse, if they ever knew it, for they are ready to sacrifice their souls, the soul of their party and the soul of America, our tradition of free and fair elections as the means for peacefully transferring power, so that Donald Trump can remain president and one of these sleazebags can eventually replace him. The governing philosophy of these unprincipled Trump cult Republicans is unmistakably clear. Democracy is fine for us so long as it is a mechanism for us to be in control. If we can't hold power, then to hell with rules and to hell with the system. Power doesn't flow from the will of the people. It flows from our will and our leaders' will. And like I said, this proceeds from the assumption that Trump lost the free and fair election, which 40% of the country does not hold, including 30% of independents and 13% of Democrats. I said 30% yesterday. I should have said 13% of Democrats believe that the election was stolen or rigged or there was fraud. Something like that. So for Friedman writes, for America to be healthy again, decent Republicans in office and in business need to break away from this unprincipled Trump cult GOP and start their own principled conservative party. It is urgent. As much as I disagree with his characterization of Republicans as trying to overthrow the Republic and trying to instigate a coup, I do agree here. I think that decent Republicans should start their own principled conservative party, but I don't know about the need to break away from the unprincipled Trump cult. I do think that now is the time for founding parties. Now is the time for third parties to arise. We're seeing it on the left with this movement for a people's party that hopes to become the progressive alternative to the Democratic Party. And I'm interested to see if we get a third party on the right, whether it comes from moderate centrist Republicans who don't like the Trump train, or whether it comes from the Trumpists themselves electing to leave the Republican Party, perhaps following someone like Lynn Wood, though hopefully someone a little bit more, with a few fewer screws loose than Mr. Lynn Wood. So even if only a small group of principled center-right lawmakers and the business leaders who fund them broke away and formed their own conservative coalition, they would become hugely influential in today's closely divided Senate. They could be a critical swing faction helping to decide which Biden legislation passes, is moderated, or fails. Meanwhile, the Trump rump GOP cult would become what it needs to become for America to grow together again, a discredited, powerless minority of crackpots waiting around for Trump's latest tweet to tell them what to do, say, and believe. Of course, that depends on the perspective from which you look at it. It can either be that we're basically all on board in America, except for this small group of people who refuse to just let go of their weird bootlicking obsession with Trump, or we can point out that 40% of people don't believe this election was legitimate. In other words, you get 10 people in a room, four of them are going to be like, yeah, this election, I don't know. And one of them is probably a Democrat, or at least an independent. And so it's hard for me to look at it the way Thomas Friedman looks at it. I know that all of his friends are probably comfortable leftist liberals. All of the people that he knows are comfortable leftist liberals. All of the people that he works with are comfortable leftist liberals. And for that reason, it's easy for him to look around and say, this is real America. This is what people are really like. And those crazy people over there, because he doesn't know any of them. So it's easy to kind of otherize them and say, oh, those people over there are gross and weird and they live in trailers and they smell like cheap shampoo, if they smell like shampoo at all. Probably smell like body odor instead of shampoo. Anyway, that's enough Thomas Friedman impressions. The point being that there's really a lot of different ways to look at this. And fundamentally, we have to, well, before I get into the fundamentals, let's look at what the other side has to say. Those Nerdy Metal Guys says, I believe the left will sorely miss Trump in 6 months when they lack a common enemy and their party implodes. You are indeed already seeing that. As we talked about yesterday, there was that editorial in The Hill talking about the media being very upset with losing Trump. And that editorial actually argued that the media will continue to cover Trump after he leaves the presidency because really he's been the best thing for business that they've ever had. And he does represent a unifying enemy. Trump is to the left what the left wishes Russia was to the entire country. But yeah, I think you're also starting to see the party splitting apart. Well, now that they won, now that they finally got what they wanted, with Trump is leaving office in a couple days, and you start to see the progressives turning on the centrist Democrats, the establishment Democrats, the Biden Democrats. They're not pleased with the fact that Biden froze out Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren from his cabinet. They're kind of upset with the fact that I think Biden is really, he's going to take a center direction. He's going to be a faithful member of the Republican-Democrat uniparty. And ultimately that's going to piss off the Trump Republicans, who I'm hoping will form their own party, and we can get Democrats who are pissed off at the Democrats forming their People's Party, and we will then have what amounts to a three-party system with the populist left party, the populist right party, and then the Democrat-Republican unit party, the centrist party. And then, if my theories are correct, the left the progressive populists and the right-wing populists will realize they have more in common with each other than they have separating them, and they will ultimately band together, and they will be the ones determining policy in 10, 15, or 20 years in the election of 2040. But anyway, so you have two different right-wing perspectives that I want to look at here. One of them is from the American Spectator, why an electoral college challenge is imperative, and one from Revolver that says it's a stunt. Senate Republicans aren't, quote, warriors for Trump, and they won't save his presidency. Now, I'm more inclined to sympathize with this viewpoint, though this is also, I think, they are correct in their reasoning, but I think they give a little bit too much faith. Yeah, they have too much faith in their politicians. And we have this lovely picture here of Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley in Roman gladiator gear emblazoned with Republican elephants. So January 6th has become a rallying cry for millions of proud patriots who hope that the Congress will reject globalist Joe Biden's ill-begotten electors and restore President Trump to 4 more years in the White House. Are Republican senators suddenly our knights in shining armor? Sadly, we do not believe this to be the case. It appears that Republican senators have chosen to do nothing more than a publicity stunt that they believe will mollify and pacify the Republican base and boost their respective standings in the horse race for the 2024 elections. And of course, people were pointing out that Josh Hawley ended up on Bret Baier, and Bret Baier quizzed him. He said, do you really believe that there's any chance that Trump can become the president for a second term? And Hawley kind of had a, the reason I'm doing this, he had a come on, man moment a la Joe Biden, because he couldn't really say, yes, I think we can still win this election because he's not a crazy person. But he also can't say, no, there's no hope, because then he pisses off the very Trump people that he's trying to court with this move. It's very easy to look at this and say what these Republicans really want is credit. What they really want is gold stars from the Trump people, because these are Republicans who are positioning themselves as the successors to Trump. It is unfortunate, I guess, but in a way it's also good. It represents a way in which we get a little bit of a shakeup. And at times like these, shakeups can be good. New faces with new ideas can prevent us from descending into the kind of revolutionary chaos, the kind of minor civil war that will really make all of our lives miserable. Because politics is fun to watch on TV, but when it comes to your front yard, it takes on a whole new level of gravity that I don't think really any of us want, unless you're already a member of Antifa or the Proud Boys, in which case you can go to someone else's city and fight in the streets and you can plant your flags here and there and wherever. I'm happy to have discussions with people who disagree with me politically. I'm not interested in street fighting. I don't think it solves anything, and most revolutions end up either killing or impoverishing the very people they were supposed to help. Just ask Robespierre or the average German who just wanted a job come April 1945, whether they felt like their revolutionary pretensions ever worked out for them. But fundamentally, actually, before we read this, let me explain why it is I think that an electoral college challenge is still necessary, however, whether or not these Republicans are acting in good faith. So I made this little decision matrix here just to so we can think through this clearly, because you have the New York Times claiming this is a coup, these people should be in prison, and then you have people on the right claiming if you are not on board with this, it's because you don't really love Trump or America. You probably wish you lived in Sweden or China, and get out of my country, you dirty liberal hippie. But of course, we can just be rational and reasonable about this and try to actually like make decisions that make sense instead of virtue signaling to our friends and people who buy the same kind of t-shirt as us. So we have on the y-axis here, or the rows, we have the top would be, we're assuming that there is fraud. So if there is fraud, is up here. And then the lower level, the bottom cells, is assuming there was no fraud. So, and then across the top, we have Congress does challenge the results, as is happening today, or Congress does not challenge the results, as presumably the New York Times, The Week, and Raw Story would like to see them, well, would like to not see them do. Yeah, you get the idea. So, in other words, if there was fraud, and Congress does challenge the election, then in theory, we should be able to find and fix the fraud. Maybe. Now, of course, there's a lot of issues that have to be worked out, namely the one that I've brought up repeatedly, which was any fraud that went on in this election was not done by idiots, and you're not going to find the conclusive evidence of it, especially with at least 40% of the country convinced that you are a lunatic and there's absolutely no evidence. I'm assuming that there's a middle 20% of people who are basically on the fence and don't know whether there was fraud or not. So if there was fraud and Congress does not challenge the election, we know that that's bad. That's fraud was rewarded with victory. And so basically, like a toddler who throws a tantrum and gets what they want, people will inevitably commit more fraud as they got away with it and they got what they wanted out of it. Now, assuming that there was no fraud and Congress challenges the vote, we in theory discovered that there is nothing to fix. And that everything was above board and everybody goes home happy. Antifa and the Proud Boys all marry each other, put up their guns and their baseball bats, and live happily behind white picket fences, spending most of their time deciding which way to vote on homeowners association plebiscites. And then if there was no fraud and Congress does not challenge the electoral vote, we have a confidence crisis in the Biden administration. And this brings up the real problem with this whole thing. And this is down here, assuming there is no fraud, because so many people so aggressively believe that there was fraud that no fraud has to. It's very difficult to prove a negative, right? So we're stuck in the position of trying to bring these people who believe that the election was absolutely stolen and Biden is completely illegitimate back into the fold of American politics so that they don't, for example, stop voting and start shooting people, so that they don't stop voting and start throwing rocks at buildings, so that they don't go out and join the Proud Boys because they feel like there's just no point in voting anymore. A crisis of confidence in the election, legitimate or not, is its own crisis. And I don't think that it's just Trump. We knew that Trump was never going to accept that he lost. But there is a scenario in which Trump says, I absolutely didn't lose. And people go, come on, man. Biden was 70-30. Biden won. He won 47 states. You lost. Come on, man. Oklahoma went for Biden. West Virginia went for Biden. He won all of the bellwether counties. He won Ohio and Florida. He clearly won the election. But that's not what we got. Giving the maximum benefit of the doubt to everyone involved, what we really got was an unusual election, a very unusual election in which Biden did not win any of the bellwether counties. He did not win Ohio. He did not win Florida. And there's a lot of weird statistical stuff going on with the way these votes came in. I don't really go in for sworn affidavits or oh my God, video evidence, because video evidence obscures as much as it illuminates in my experience. What I do like is statistical evidence, and I can say the statistical evidence points to something smells a little bit like seafood around here. In other words, something is fishy. Now, of course, unless it can be proven, I don't think we should change anything, and I don't think it can be proven. So I think ultimately we got to just kind of take the L and say, all right, Biden's the president. Let's take the next 4 years and make sure that we don't end up with something like this again. Let's fix the real problem. You got to take a short-term L when you mess up. We messed up in the United States. We messed up when we let this, when we didn't have close eyes on the election process. You know, there's this thing. I remember Jordan Peterson used to talk about this. He said, you know, the Jews, the ancient Israelites, maybe not Jews, but the ancient Israelites had this thing where, oh, if something bad happens to us, we have these prophets who come wandering out of the wilderness covered in thorns with long beards who say, the reason that you were kidnapped by the Babylonians and sold into slavery is because you weren't following God. And so the ancient Israelites, when something went wrong, the first people they blamed was themselves. And Peterson said, this is a very powerful way to live. And I agree completely. Because I tend to follow the Stoics and I tend to follow the Taoists. The Taoists are not relevant at this point, but the Stoics are. When something goes wrong, I can't point my fingers at everybody else and say, well, the Democrats did this and Biden did that and Linwood did this and Trump did that. What I have to look at is myself. You want to see the problem? Look in a mirror. That's where the problem is. That's what the really powerful people, that's what people who really get things done do. Is when something goes wrong, they look first to themselves. And so what do I, Patrick Cunningham, insofar as I represent in front of this camera, a microcosm of the self-reflective American people, think about what happened in this election? I, the microcosm of self-reflective America, didn't do enough to ensure election integrity. So you know what? Now I get to a president I don't like. Now I get Biden. And now apparently we get a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House, all of them, the Senate, the House, and the presidency by razor-thin margins. They won three coin tosses in a row, in other words, which is not evidence of fraud necessarily. It's just an unlikely outcome. But what it means, if it's really fraud, what that means is we need to sit down and figure out how to prevent the next fraud. You can't fix this one. We lost. That's it. So you have to get ready for next time. That's all we can do at this point. So whatever happens today in Washington, it really doesn't matter. It's a bunch of Republicans posturing to try and nail down their shot at the presidency in 2024 or try and shore up their chances of reelection. honestly, we do need to investigate the elections because two reasons. First of all, the one I just outlined, so we can prevent stuff like this from happening again. And two, because of this confidence crisis in the Biden administration, because half the country thinks that he's not the legitimate president. This has not happened in my lifetime. I've never seen this before. Not that I'm especially old, but I'm old enough to remember Bush v. Gore, and it was nothing like this. This is way, way worse. This is not the far leftist joking together on the internet about how George Bush is really just the governor of Texas. It's not George Carlin talking about how he refuses to capitalize George Bush's name because he's only ever been the governor of Georgia. Those Nerdy Metal Guys says, we have had this before, the blue wave. We simply need to hang on for 2 years and prep for the red reversal in 2022. Yes, in all likelihood, the Republicans will control the House of Representatives in 2022. What Ice was specifically talking about, guys, Nerdy Metal Guys, was the supposed fraud in the presidential election. The thing to do now is not to move on to the next big story of the week. The thing to do now is to focus on dealing with those election problems. So when we have an election in 2024 and somebody comes out and says this is the most secure election ever, that there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of Republicans around the country holding their thumbs up like this going, yes, it was. You know why? Because I made sure it was. That's the way to move forward here. That's what we need to do, because yes, I think that it is pretty much just a known fact, unless the Democrats pull out some kind of massive, the most massively popular administration ever, which Biden and Harris are, I don't think that's going to happen. Then yeah, the Republicans will take the House in 2022 and probably take back the Senate at some point in the near future. And you'll have an even a strapped Biden administration who does basically nothing, which frankly is good. It would be nice to have a government that doesn't really do much of anything for a few years, and we can like forget about them and focus on reinviting our uncle, who is a weird conspiracy theorist, back to Thanksgiving dinner so we can make peace and be a country again instead of two warring factions. But anyway, that brings us to the end of our hour. I hope you found some interesting tidbits with which to plan your particular part in the coming cultural revolution that will no doubt restore America to its pristine, celestial, city on a hill status. In the meantime, we will be back tomorrow to discuss the results of the Electoral College Challenge, especially or as well as anything interesting that transpires in the meantime. We are here every morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, so check in regularly for updates and my hilarious and insightful commentary on the news of the day and political and philosophical topics more broadly. So remember to follow us if you're on Twitch, subscribe if you're on YouTube, follow us on DLive if you're watching there. We will be back tomorrow. So thank you all for watching. This has been another episode of Socratic Citizen.